Libyan ship or vessel, remain anchored. Do not leave port. The Gaddafi regime forces are violating a United Nations resolution ordering the end of hostilities in your country. If you attempt to leave port, you will be attacked and destroyed immediately. For your own safety, do not leave port.
Les vaisseaux libyens doivent rester en port. Le gouvernement de la Libye désobéit à une résolution des Nations Unies d'arrêter les hostilités dans votre pays. Si vous attentez de quitter le port, vous serez attaqué et détruit immédiatement. Pour votre propre bien, ne quittez pas le port.
الضباط البحرية الليبيون اتركوا سفينتكم فورا ارجعوا الى عوائلكم وبيوتكم بسلام نظام القذافي سينتهك قرار الامم المتحدة.
American media is a business and it has a mission not to inform Americans but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive, it's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting from the Internet for Monday, March 28th, 2011. Oh my gosh, I guess spring is upon us. That's why I like March, because we're marching towards April. And, of course, the sun is staying longer in the sky. And you're listening to Newsreel, the Wall Global Sitrep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rand Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow up on all these news stories. And you can check my facts by going to my live journal, and you can get there by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This is a free podcast that can be heard on Rad Radio Talk, Red Mercury SE, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, KJAG Radio, Osprey Networks, Creek Radio, iTunes, Podcast.com, Podcast Alley, and every Thursday night at 7 p.m. You can hear us in Second Life, Node Archers, Grid 155-74666. And with us tonight, we got Agent Dak, Ava Mode, Anthony L., Seerdark, Cyzeris, Flash DUI, Mindy Starak, who's looking stunning, Morps, Smurfort, Sophia, probably does look stunning, but I can't see her, Yukasaki Ivorward, by Tebring Resident. So thank you very much, all of you have showed up. And don't worry, it's not that I just don't have time to look around the stage, that's why I can't see you, you know. So, of course, if you have never been to Second Life, you should definitely check it out, and why not? If you're going to go and sit in your basement and pretend you're an elf, why not do it with some friends? Really, you know, it'd be good fun. And while you're down there pretending you're an elf, you should remember that we are simulcast on Radio 99, transmitting from a frequency of 6673.3 kilohertz. Now, right off the top, Simi is not with me on the show yet again because he sucks and is weak and has school homework because he's all in film school, which everyone is really happy about. I think it's retarded because if a person is winning film awards, you don't go to film school. Like, you first you go to school, then you win the awards. You don't win awards and then go to school. Whatever, you know, you're doing, you know what you're doing. You know, you don't need the school thing, but apparently he wants to go get a piece of paper and, you know, his logic is that it can only make him stronger, which, you know, fair enough. Fair ball. All hail the Sim, you know, so he can produce better media for the masses to give away for free. Now then, let's get into some feedback right off the top. Hi guys, I'm mailing you today from the green countryside of Ireland. Potatoes. I've recently been checking out where you guys do what you guys do at Rant Media, and I just wanted to say that it is really great work. Thanks for putting all your time and effort into such a noble cause. That's all about I wanted to say, that you are awesome and totally appreciated. When I start making money, again, I'll start donating and buying Rant Media products and support y'all. However, as you may have heard, Ireland is a bit of the economic poop at the bin at the moment. Richer. So, hey, Richer, thanks, man. It's cool to know that we do have people, you know, overseas, which is funny because I'm talking about spring, right? And I don't know, is it spring in Ireland right now? I guess it's Northern Hemisphere, right? It must be spring for them, too. But what about all the people in the Southern Hemisphere? What about all of our, you know, foreign people in the... Do we have any listeners in the Southern Hemisphere where it's getting winter for them now? I'd like to know. I really would. I have gotten mail in the past from people from Thailand, which I thought was kind of interesting to know that we're over there. And I'm sure there's some overseas people. You know, if you're in the army and you're on a foreign base and you're listening to Newsreel, that counts if you're in the southern hemisphere. So, you know, get me back. I'd like to know. Another piece of feedback here. Dear Sean, on the story with the woman, McClorsky from Clearwater, Florida, and the Vision Tech using counterfeit computer chips for military use. Now, this was that. This is a story I covered where there was counterfeit chips being sold as mil-spec equipment, but it wasn't mil-spec equipment out of Clearwater, Florida. And these chips were being put into military craft, which were, you know, life-saving, mission-critical computer systems that are supposed to have a certain grade piece of equipment in there. And because she could make a buck by rebranding these chips into mil-spec that's not, you know, she may have endangered the lives of literally thousands of people, and I think, you know, she should probably be hung for treason. But something that I didn't put together was illustrated from this letter. It said, my question is, Clearwater, Florida is the Scientology home base. Huh. Google shows that a lot of McCorskys with the Scientology course completed. Interesting. So there's, like, you can actually go and see you on Scientology. So she could be some kind of, maybe that was something that was happening with the Scientologists. Interesting idea. Connection, maybe, worthy of note. Sent in by Derpon. Very good catch. Very good catch. I'd like to, yeah, so well done. Well done. Definitely, you get an honorary banana in the Army of the Flying Monkeys, because that's a good point. Maybe there's something going on there. I don't really know. But let's get into some news. In cybercrime news, on Tuesday, the Obama administration recommended that the Department of Homeland Security make a streaming copyright video a felony, and that it could use wiretaps in the investigation of those offenses. Holy freaking crap. So basically, Rant Media is now guilty of a felony. In a white paper released on Tuesday, the government released a set of recommendations prepared by Victoria Espinzel, an intellectual property coordinator. Under the paper stiffens penalties for intellectual property violations, ranging from economic espionage, the sale of counterfeit drugs, and violations of copyright law. Interesting grouping together. In the latter case, the Obama administration asked to increase penalties for repeat offenders and the right for DHS to confer with rights holders before beginning an investigation or prosecution of manufacturers of devices which infringe copyright. But the new recommendations also permit relief or exemption from prosecution for those who unknowingly and unintentionally acquire infringing products, who do not voluntarily disclose them, becoming aware of a, and who voluntarily discloses them before becoming aware of a criminal investigation. So if you say, hey, yeah, I've got this, absolutely, I bought this, here it is, then you're, if you confess your sins, mea culpa, I have downloaded the Enigma album, then fine, you get off scot-free. Interesting. The recommendations include felony penalties for streaming video. In January, a study linked piracy to which users can upload video and other files. Now, a study linked to piracy to sites which users can upload video. So that's a study was done. So I guess they figured out that if you can upload video to anywhere, that's piracy. I'm glad they needed a study for that. Anyway, now if the guidelines are approved, those sites would be guilty of a felony if convicted. So this is something I would think that could be used to shut down. I wonder if this would shut down news groups. I wonder if they could use this to then say that news groups are guilty, and that would be a way that they could shut them down. Because news groups is where everybody used to get their music, right? So, I mean, never mind all the tours and torrents. But interesting that they might try that. It's imperative that our laws account for change in technology used by infringers, the Obama administration wrote. One recent technological change is the illegal streaming of content. Existing laws provide felony penalties for willful copyright infringement, but felony penalties are predicated on the defendant either illegally reproducing or distributing the copyrighted work. Questions have arisen whether streaming constitutes the distribution of copyrighted works and thereby a felony, and or performances of who works thereby not a felony. These questions have impaired the criminal enforcement of copyright laws. So, what this means is if I go to a concert with Project Gargoyle and I've got myself all hooked up so that I'm broadcasting everything I see and hear into the internet, since I'm at this concert, I don't have that intellectual right to do that, so therefore I am now a felon because I have broadcast what's going on in the room. Interesting. Interesting. I wonder if I had intellectual property rights, because everyone does, right? So what if you take your own intellectual property rights of yourself, your image, the image of you? Okay, so you copyright the image of you. You spend the money, you go and do that. So now you have, that is without a doubt, your the use of your image, anything to do with your image has to be taken from you, right? Now, there's a couple of things you could do with that. I suppose you could go photobomb people. So every time paparazzi took a picture of a celebrity and you were in the background, they ran that photo, you could hit them with a lawsuit. You could also start setting up CCTV, any mall that records you, anyone that's trying to use. I wonder if that would make video evidence inadmissible of you because you they're actually submitting illegal footage as a, you know, it's an interesting, when you start getting into intellectual property law, it gets kind of interesting. So they're definitely trying to lock this stuff down. I guess there's a certain point to it, but, you know, I love the internet because it provides people with free access to information. And I think that that's one of the really important things we need to hold on to. So when things, I don't know, intellectual property law, I understand the writers need to get paid and stuff, but still, it's an interesting sort of quagmire to get bogged down in. Now, of course, somebody who don't like to get bogged down are spin doctors, and we got some spin doctor news. Now, this is, I love spin doctor news. This is always a story which they put an interesting spin on things. Thank you very much, Pyrodox, for sending this one in. In Calgary, the police are gearing up for two rallies planned in Calgary this weekend. Now, this went down last weekend, and the cops, of course, freak out. Anti-racist groups and white power supporters have planned separate marches downtown for the same day. The rallies are an annual event for each group. Police are concerned that demonstrators will become violent. On March 21st, 2009, police stepped in when the two groups clashed. Officials were planning the worst, but hope this year's event will be a peaceful demonstration. Police will monitor both marches. If the situation escalates, more resources will be called in. The officers are concerned that protesters may use similar tactics to those used by the Black Bloc during the G20 summits in Toronto. Now, the interesting thing is this use of the term Black Bloc, and that's why it's in Spin Doctor News. The Black Bloc, the Black Bloc. Who are they? Is that a terrorist group? It's not a group, and it's starting to be used as a group. So you may start to see this in other media where they talk about the Black Bloc. A Black Bloc is not a group, but a tactic for solidarity and anonymity at protests. This is the exact same illusionary group that police at the G8 and G20 summits used to justify a $1 billion security budget. A Black Bloc is a tactic for protesters and marches, whereby individuals wear black clothing, scarves, ski masks, motorcycle helmets with padding and other face-concealing items, often carry some sort of shield, and truncheons. The clothing is used to avoid being identified and to theoretically appear as one large mass, promoting solidarity. The tactic was developed in the 80s by an autonomous protesting squatter evictions, nuclear power, and restrictions on abortions, among other things. Black Blocs gained broader media attention outside Europe during the 1999 anti-WTO demonstrations when the Black Power Bloc when a Black Bloc damaged property of Gap, Starbucks, Old Navy, and other multinational retail locations in downtown Seattle. Yes! So for those of you who want to know a little bit more about that, so very interesting how they're beginning to lock that down, you know, with the definitions of what, you know, terrorist groups. Are you part of the Black Bloc? You know, all you got to do is be wearing black, I guess, and be in the wrong place, wrong time, and you can get lumped in with these guys. But also, you know, with surveillance going everywhere now, it's not like it was back in the 80s either. It's not like it was back in the 90s. Now, they want everybody pretty locked down, which makes me think about things like, you know, the infrared LED hat brims that you can make that hide your face so that, you know, if you don't even have to be a Black Bloc, but since, you know, you own your own intellectual property on your face, you're not actually doing anything wrong. You're just preventing these people from stealing your image. And that's why you walk around with LEDs in infrared broadcasting and really, really bright, so it screws up cameras trying to focus on your face. You know, I don't care how great your camera is, it can be an awesome picture, but if you can't account for that, it's going to screw up all your video. And that's why it's my own intellectual property. I've registered myself. All images of me are there, and you're not allowed to take it. So, as a matter of fact, just for even trying, and if you restrict me in any way, I'm going to start making money the same way that, you know, these guys over at the Westboro Baptist Church do. They'll just walk around trolling people until somebody hits them or somebody freaks out, then they sue the living pants off of them. That's their big scam, a bunch of trolls. Anyway, let's go looking at other weird ways we might make money and espionage. But let's talk about shadow running. Yes. Now, in Pakistan, a CIA contractor who shot and killed two Pakistani men was freed from prison after the United States paid $2.34 million in blood money to the victims' families. Pakistani officials said defusing the dispute, which had strained ties between Washington and Islamabad, in which they appeared to be carefully choreographed to end the diplomatic crisis. The U.S. Embassy said the Justice Department had opened an investigation into the killings on January 27 by Raymond Allen Davis. It thanked the families for their generosity in pardoning Davis, but did not mention that any money changed hands. The killings and detention of Davis triggered a fresh wave of anti-American sentiment in Pakistan and were testing an alliance seen as key to defeating al-Qaeda in the ending of the war in Afghanistan. The tensions were especially sharp between CIA and Pakistan's powerful inter-services intelligence, which says they did not know Davis was operating in the country. One ISI official said the agency had backed the blood money deal as a way of soothing tensions. Small groups of protesters took to the streets in major cities after nightfall, briefly clashing with police outside the U.S. consulate in Lahore, where officers fired tear gas at men, burning tires and hurling rocks. Some called for larger protests on Friday afternoon prayers. Davis, 34-year-old Virginia native, claimed he acted in self-defense when he killed two men in the street in the eastern city of Lahore. The United States initially described him as either a U.S. consular or embassy official, but officials later acknowledged he was working for the CIA, confirming suspicions that had aired in Pakistani media. The United States had insisted Davis was covered by diplomatic immunity, but the weak government here, facing the intense pressure from the Islamic parties, sections of the media and the general public did not say whether this was the case. So what they did was, you've got a CIA spy, geeks two guys, and in the foreign land, it is able to pay out, they got off by paying him $2.34 million in blood money to let this guy go. Families are happy, everybody's good, doesn't really seem like a problem here. And I think that this is actually not that bad of a plan, really. You know, honestly, if they're down for that, if you're dumb enough to get caught and stuff, I mean, when you think about the cost of, like, a bomber, or even bombs, you know, or an attack, I don't know what it would cost to mount a special forces team to go in and extract him, but it's probably going to be, actually, more than $2.34 million. You know, so if it's a difference engine, you know, let's say it was actually $2 million. I bet you if he said, well, it's kind of like this, guys, it's going to cost us, you know, $2 million to send in a spec ops team and, you know, get this guy out. But we'll give you 1.5 and you just let it go. How's that go? And in which case, you know, that could be one way to go. It's interesting, you know, when you everyone's looking at this, that we think about what's going on in Libya right now. And of course, before the show, there's that message that was broadcast by the Americans to Libya saying, hey, you got to stop doing this. You know, if you try to board any ships and leave the country, you're going to be stopped. And that's actually the actual broadcast, which was run from the PSYOPs. Everyone loves to crap all over the Americans. It's really hilarious. Globally, people crap all over them. And it's easy to pick on the person who's kind of leading, isn't it? It's easy to throw rocks at those guys. And it really makes me crazy, because I'm not an American, I'm a Canadian. You know, like, that matters. You know, I didn't choose to be born here any more than any American chooses to be born in America. And I don't try to really wrap myself up in flags and symbolism, because it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I like to think of myself as an Earthling and a Wog and, you know, cross-border, all that good stuff. But to just, you know, the Americans, if they hadn't have gone in there and done that, Gaddafi would be bombing the snot out of his people right now. And now there's groups within America saying, what are you doing? You know, it's their problem. Let them sort it out and all this kind of jazz. If you have the power to stop something, I think you should probably, you know, if you're walking down the street and you see there's some guy beating up a child, if you don't intercede, you kind of condone that, don't you? I mean, you kind of say, well, that's all right. And people say, well, you know, Sean, there's all kinds of tragedy going on all over the world. And you're right, there is. There's all kinds of tragedy. But just because you can't stop it all doesn't mean you shouldn't stop some of it. And you got to keep your own interests out front, sure. But is it all just math? Is it all just difference engines? I don't know. I'm an idealist. I try to think that there's something more to it, and that we're, you know, trying to do the right thing. And maybe if you're trying to do the right thing, then you're one of the good guys. But I guess a lot of the Nazis thought they were trying to do the right thing, but their idea of the right thing was totally wrong and evil. So
You know, what do you, how do you get the moral compass on that? Which always comes back to, if it decreases suffering overall, it's good. If it increases suffering, it's bad, with a few caveats like no death camps. So, you know, it's a good moral compass to run with. But this particular story here, where they paid, a measly $2.3 million and got their guy out of there, well, let's just say that I'd feel better about working for the CIA. At least they didn't let me hang out there for, you know, nothing, which is no big deal. Anyway, in lab rat news, always liking the lab rat news. Thank you very much, Nephilim, for sending this story in. VM, this is the initials of the woman, has been separated from her baby for 3 years in the name of child welfare, all because she didn't want to pre-authorize a cesarean section that neither she nor the hospital had any reason to believe would be medically necessary and wasn't. The RH Reality Check reports that when VM showed up at the hospital planning to give birth vaginally, she was asked to sign a pre-consent form permitting a C-section should it become necessary. Here, we got to do a C-section. She refused. Interesting. Had there been an unexpected complication with the pregnancy, VM could have consented to the procedure at that time, because she's conscious, right? But she didn't want to sign away her ability to make decisions about whether or not her baby would be sliced out of her belly. This sounds perfectly reasonable. The hospital, however, disagreed. After giving birth without complications, VM's newborn was taken away from her on charges of endangering child welfare. She and her husband have been fighting for 3 years to get their child back. Holy crap. There's a number of problems with this decision by the hospital, starting with the fact that the only welfare endangerment you could allege from the times of VM's refusal was that of a fetus, since it was not yet any child. Secondly, many hospitals are trigger-happy when it comes to this surgery. New Jersey hospital has a 50% C-section rate, which can be due to financial considerations or simple bias toward the procedure, although the C-section can have on its own complications and pose issues for the future pregnancies. Thirdly, there's controversy surrounding whether hospitals should even be allowed to ask for pre-consent for pregnant women with no signs of needing the procedure. So if it's a procedure, of course, they're going to be charging more as well. So isn't that interesting? Now, to me, there comes a point when you have to go, whoa, you know, am I part of society? Am I part of this? Do I choose to be a part of it? You know, I don't think we have to be a part of all of this. I think there comes a point when you have to be like, well, you know what, I'm not going to do this, and I'm not going to do that. And this also kind of comes into the category of prior planning. You know, if you're pregnant, you know, 9 months from now, at some point, you know, around the 9 month mark, hopefully, you're going to be, you know, in labor, so you should probably have your hospital picked out. You should probably know all the rules and regulations about what's going on with the whole hospital situation. And if you travel and you're going to be, you know, moving through multiple cities or something like that, you should definitely have, you know, things thought out as to where you might go so that you don't wind up having your baby taken away from you by a bunch of crazy hospital staff. You know, just as a sort of a general guideline. I understand. I understand it's difficult. Especially when you're, you know, carrying around a unborn thing inside of you. You know, larval humans are quite dependent upon their parents. So, you know, I can see why that would be stressful. But I don't think there's any excuse here for prior planning. So once again, you know, be prepared. And it is kind of a sick amount of power we're giving to hospitals with these forms, eh? Where they're like, well, you know, you don't even have governance of your own body and how you do this. I mean, really, there comes a point when, you know, I'm not too sure I want the state raising my kid because look what wonderful jobs they do with rehabilitating people and whatnot. So I don't know what the answer is. Maybe there's, you know, maybe we're all going to wind up in some sort of bizarre boarding school reality where everyone has to take these same courses and be drilled. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's a good thing. I like having things kind of volunteer, though. You know, conscription never works into armies or into societies or into cultures. So, you know, I think we should try to learn from that. Now, of course, in tracking news, now this is an interesting story because never mind all the other different types of security you can run. Interesting tracking news story I came across. Engineers and computer scientists say they devised a novel method for identifying authors of anonymous emails that's reliable enough to be used in courts of law. Wow. In a series of papers published over the last few years, researchers from Concordia University in Montreal, thank you, French people, have described what they say is the first ever data mining algorithm for identifying the most plausible author of an anonymous email. So what they're doing is they're looking at how you organize your words and sentences and whatever, and to say, yeah, this is your style, this is you. It works by establishing a write print of each suspect author by quantifying unique patterns of each individual's email writings. It can be used to unmask authors of emails, used in spam, phishing, cyberbullying, and other types of offenses. Oh, that's nice. Our insight is that the write print of an individual is the combinations of features that occur frequently in his or her written emails. The researchers wrote a paper, first published in the publication Digital Investigation. Commonly used features are lexical, syntactical, structural, and content-specific attributes. By matching the write print with malicious email, the true author can be identified, which means that it brings together the many, many uses with voice procedure. Yes, if everyone was to have a certain procedure and certain ways of organizing emails, it'd be very hard to tell. You know, if you especially had specific paragraphs that were just used in specific orders. There's all kinds of ways around this. And also, I'm not so sure that, I mean, this as being infallible, I don't know, man. I think if I was a lawyer, I could probably punch a lot of really big holes in this. This whole thing sounds a little bit, well, it's an interesting idea and something to be aware of. So maybe you should, if you are so minded, you should, you know, alter your techniques of writing. Maybe a different paragraph here, different paragraph there. Maybe, I don't know. Mess around with it. Maybe try to write with an accent. You know, different accents. Do your fake accent, and then write like you have a fake accent. That'd be very hard to, identify something like that. That's one way to beat it, I would think of. And, you know, there's ways around this, but you have to know that they're doing this. So, you know, now you know, because you listen to Newsreel. More fun in the United Kingdom. God, you know, when will that place really calm down? I don't know. It's just, the United Kingdom is so George Orwell now, it's out of control. The country that brought you the Boy Scouts won't let you have a pocket knife. Something is very fundamentally wrong there. In UK slavery news, thank you very much, Name Redacted. Work-shy benefit claimants, so, you know, if you don't have a job, they will be forced to do compulsory work in exchange for welfare under radical rules imposed in Parliament today. This is now law. The unemployed could be instructed to do mandatory work activity under a controversial new program outlined by Work and Pensions Minister Chris Grayling. Candidates will only be referred to compulsory work placement if a Job Centre Plus advisor believes they are deliberately avoiding trying to get a job and would benefit from getting into the habits and routines of getting up every morning. The Department for Work and Pensions says every work placement would give a job seeker the chance to acquire fundamental work-related disciplines and be the benefit to local communities. It is thought they will have to pick up litter, mend fences, or help repaint care homes. Job seekers would have to spend 30 hours a week for a month on their place of work placement, would still have to look for work in between. They will have to do 4 stints of work to continue doing their benefits. If they fail to turn up or to complete the work, they could be stripped of their benefits for at least 3 months. Now, on the surface, this sounds like it wouldn't be too bad of an idea. But I look at something like that and go, well, how can that be abused? You know, because the longer you let people be involved with something like this, the longer... People are amazing at finding ways to exploit things. So just as there are, yeah, losers and deadbeats who exploit, you know, the welfare system and they, you know, they try to make money from off of other people's backs, which, of course, is the exact same thing that bosses do, so there's a certain argument to be made for that, but I'm not too sure. That looks an awful lot like slavery to me. I don't know, you know. I suppose they're saying, well, we're going to give you money, but you have to work for it. They are giving you money, so I suppose maybe it's not slavery, but definitely a pretty hard-line approach. Haven't seen that before. Good to know the Empire and the Imperial system is still alive, eh? And, you know, they're not playing favorites anymore. They, you know, that's a great thing about Britain and the UK. When the Empire was going around the world, they used to do it to everybody else. Now, they're doing it to themselves. I guess, you know, there's some kind of sick irony in there somehow. Now, here's an interesting story and another reason why I don't like new cars. Never mind the fact that half of them can be, you know, disabled from any number of features that exist now, which have no other role in the car other than to disable it. In auto hacking news, thank you much, very much, IceHawk. Researchers who have spent the last 2 years studying the security of car computer systems have revealed they can take control of vehicles wirelessly, period. The researchers were able to control everything from the car's brakes to its door locks to computerized dashboard displays by accessing the onboard computer through GM's OnStar and Ford Sync, as well as through the Bluetooth connections intended for making hands-free phone calls. They presented their findings this week to the National Academy's Committee on Electronics, Vehicle Controls, and Unintended Acceleration, which is brought together partly in response of last year's scandal over the supposed problems with the computerized braking systems in Toyota Priuses. The team, including Tashidoshi Koho, an assistant professor of computer sciences at the University of Washington, and Stefan Savage, a professor of computer science at the University of California, San Diego, had previously shown that they could take control of a car's computer, provided that they had physical access to the vehicle's onboard diagnostics port, a federally mandated access point located under the dashboard in almost all modern cars. With the new work, the researchers systematically analyzed ways they could get into the car's computer system without having physical access. They used a 2009 mass production sedan, equipped with fewer computer systems than many high-end cars. For each attack that succeeded, they confirmed they could take complete control of all the car's internal computer systems. The researchers attacked the car's Bluetooth system, which allows the driver to make hands-free phone calls. They found a vulnerability in the way the Bluetooth system was implemented that allows them to execute code to take control of the car. To do this, researchers used a smartphone already paired up with the car and/or found a way to illicitly authorize a new smartphone connection. Nowadays, many cars come equipped with cellular connections to perform safety functions, such as automatically calling for help in the case of a driver and is in a crash. The researchers found that they could take control of this system by breaking through its authentication system. First, they made about 130 calls to gain access to and then they uploaded the code using 14 seconds of audio. The researchers also found other ways to gain access, for example, via the car's media player. We are surprised to find out that the attack surface was so broad, Koho said, referring to the wide variety of ways researchers were able to gain access to the car's computer systems. Ha-ha! Yes! So this is why I will be buying myself a diesel Suburban. Thank you very much. And also, on that front, I'm kind of not really joking. Since, you know, my Bronco from patrolling died, I am actually looking at a Chevy diesel. So if any of you find any really nice, you know, wog-ish Suburban parts, particularly in the grill or roof rack variety, tires maybe, I know very little about trucks, and well, I'd like to know, what would a wog vehicle look like? Something you could use for, you know, treasure hunting and other sort of, you know, one does not simply walk into Mordor, one drives there. And I believe one would drive there in a diesel Suburban. Into some Oilmageddon news. Yes, Oilmageddon, the story that will not go away. You know, it's nothing like killing all of your people. I think that this tragedy, I have to keep reporting on it because nobody else is, which is unfortunate. Cyzeris sent this one in. Thank you very much. Remember how all the conspiracy nuts claimed that the chemicals in BP dumped into the water might actually evaporate into the air and then rain down on the Gulf states, poisoning the land, water, and even, of course, people? And remember how the government officials said, no, that could never happen, not to worry. But we're not going to let scientists look at the data we've collected. And now people keep turning up with the what looked like chemical sickness, even though it was, of course, impossible. It wasn't impossible, and a NASA scientist has started releasing some of that hitherto unavailable data, and it's not pretty. From the data being released, which was collected by NASA missions to the Gulf, shows that the toxic compounds released from the BP spill became airborne, and significant quantities were brought onshore by precipitation, thereby exposing coastal populations to chemical poisoning. Full stop. This represents something new and unique, not observed in previous oil spills. It helps explain why there are numerous reports of people living along the Gulf Coast that was raining oil and dispersant during the summer months. The data we have collected in the atmosphere shows a very high hydrocarbon lobe, and we're able to identify more than 100 compounds in it. Many of them have health implications. Many of them. What is that? 3, 4, 20, 35, 75%? There are large amounts of them that have similarities to gasoline. In regards to that mulleting, I did seem to suggest that there are reasons for concern, and there are reasons to do additional research. The scientist, Ira Leifer, from the University of California, Santa Barbara, he was the chief mission coordination scientist on the NASA remote sensing mission to the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. He's a 10-year veteran of oil spills, as well as natural methane bubble flows. Interesting. So, what was different about this BP spill? Well, the volume of dispersants, for one thing. Previous spills were small, leading to one-day exposures. The BP exposure lasted months. Seeing it in the rain, people in California oil spills who have done testing on burning have never seen anything like that. But you don't have 102% humidity in California. And the problems are unprecedented as well. Most cleanup workers were not wearing masks or any other protection. Hell no. They just brought out inmates and made them march around. We don't know what the exposure levels were since no measurements were taken. We don't know how the risks because of the toxins. No long-term tests have been done. The big worry is that pregnant women and the elderly, at-risk populations. In that regard, at-risk populations at the level seem to suggest there could really be severe concerns for the health-related impacts. If we don't deal with this wisely, there's a danger we could see a mysterious Gulf Coast health syndrome appearing 5 years from now that nobody figures out what it is until 10 years from now, with a lot of people getting sick and very ill in the interim. Well, what's going to happen here, of course, is that people are going to get very sick. People are going to get, like, disturbingly, destructively sick, and it's going to mess a lot of people up. And, the government's going to deny it, and there'll be people going back and forth, and no, it's this, no, it's that. Maybe they'll blame the Japanese reactor or something, but that is exactly what this is. And so if you're in the Gulf Coast, now's a good time to get out of there. Get out of there. It's not a good time. Now, this particular story here made me angry. This story made me nuts. Because the difference between God and a doctor is that God doesn't think he's a doctor. That's the difference. And of course now, as people are becoming more educated, as more people are learning how to use server, the internet, and the World Wide Web, they're starting to ask questions about health. And of course nobody likes questions, especially people in control who are trying to, you know, lock down your mind, trying to stop you from understanding what's going on in the world around you. You know, it's... they don't like that. So, of course, they're going to vilify things, and that's a weapon that they use, is they vilify it. Much like what I'm doing here, only I'm propaganda for the good guys. Remember, we're the good guys. Cyberchondria. Cyzeris sent this one in. There's a new buzzword among doctors, and it's cyberchondria. Interesting. You probably have it if you've been Googling your symptoms. Period. That's it. So, if you get sick and you're like, hey, my snot is blue... What does blue snot mean? Who can I ask this? I can ask my neighbor, who doesn't know shit about blue snot, or I can ask the internet, because maybe I'm not the first person ever to have blue snot. Let's look that up. So suddenly now you're a cyberchondriac. Senior health correspondent Monica Robbins brings you this story. Being a cyberchondriac is a lot like being a hypochondriac. It's okay to do a little research on your own, but it doesn't take the place of seeing a doctor. Turning to Google to figure out your mysterious symptoms can turn up so many results, and it's downright confusing. The really scary part is it doesn't take long before it can become an obsession. Yes, an obsession. If you're worried about your health and you want to know what's, you know, wrong with you and maybe heal yourself with diet, and some of these people who, you know, are saying, hey, I used to have blue snot too, and it's because it was raining fucking oil dispersants, and it's not because of, you know, whatever the sanctioned rules are, and the pills don't work, all they do is deaden the pain until your brain liquefies and you die, you need to get the hell out of the Gulf. No, that's insane. You're a cyberchondriac. No, I'm not a cyberchondriac. I'll be a cyberchondriac survivor. How does that grab you? Cyberchondriac survivor right here. Thank you very much. And you can all be, you know, healthy and rightly medicated and die because, you know, you couldn't have the brains God gave a goat to figure out that maybe you should take some accountability for your own health. You know, I don't know. Vilifying your own research much? Maybe more than a little bit? If you have access to information and you become sick and you do not look up the symptoms that you think you have and you die, that is a type of suicide as far as I'm concerned. And well, as we all know, Well, suicide's verboten with wogs. That's just not something we do. Personal sacrifice is allowed, though. That's like, you know, where you, like, run into the burning building and run out again and you're holding the baby, which you saved, and you're on fire, and then you die from your wounds received saving the child. That's allowed. That's, technically, you could say that that's a type of suicide, but, you know, we're not going to get into splitting hairs just at this time. Into some Tempest Transmission. This is the second story in the Cyberpunk Kit section. Tempest Transmission. Very interesting piece of technology here. Now, this, as a diver, and as, you know, a treasure hunter, I'm always thinking of new and exciting ways to make a massive undersea ship in which I can, you know, loot the planet of its treasure. And this particular piece of technology is ideal for that. Tristan Laurie, a doctoral candidate in electrical and computer engineering, has developed equipment which can transmit data at high rates of speed through thick solid steel or other barriers. Significant, Laurie's kit also transmit power. And an obvious application here would be transmission through steel pressure hull of a submarine. At the moment, such hulls have hundreds of penetrations for power and data cables, each one adding expense, weight, and maintenance burden. Regular reg readers will recall that such kit previously had been developed by UK Labs and the arms Global Cult BAE Systems. Company Boppins exhibited it at last year's Farrenbones air show. Like Laurie suggested, it would have been used in submarines. Intriguingly, the BAE investors also revealed that other parties within the British government, whom they couldn't name, had been asked them to keep the secret all details of how their equipment works. This, naturally enough, led us to suspect that similar gear had, in fact, been previously developed in the secret labs of the UK government. The intelligence systems services are known to have technical arms, which occasionally invent things before they are discovered elsewhere. The best-known example is the public key encryption, secretly developed by British communications spoof boffins years before independently reinvented in U.S. academia. Oh, well, isn't that a kind of bad... Actually, we had that first. Yes, we were first with that, actually. Just... what the British spooks are doing through the metal and palms gear, of course, is a secret. So what they're doing with the kit, we don't know. But now we have the ability to transmit information and electricity through different types of barriers. Very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. So I'd like to see how that develops. Is that useful for space travel? Absolutely. So anything that is good for space travel, we like. Now, something else that, of course, we enjoy... is going fast. And something that goes fast, is happy for space travel, and was a wonderful Decepticon, is Scramjet. Yes, and everybody would like to own a Scramjet, but they don't exist yet. But now they do. Apparently, the X-51A Waverider hypersonic Scramjet project is set for its second test flight today. And the U.S. Air Force hopes it will demonstrate technology that eventually be used for a more efficient transport from payloads into orbit. The craft will be carried to 15,000, just over 15,000 meters, 50,000 feet by B-52 from St. Edward's Air Force Base, and be dropped over the Pacific Ocean. A booster rocket will fire, getting the Waverider to Mach 4.5, and then the Scramjet will kick in, so the engine starts at Mach 4.5, and designers hope it will reach Mach 6 or more. The X-51 Waverider program is a cooperative effort with the Air Force, DARPA, NASA, Boeing, Pratt & Whitney, Rocketdyne, which is a great name, Pratt & Whitney Rocketdyne. Anyway, in May 2010, the first test of the vehicle had a kind sort of a successful flight of 200 seconds of autonomous flight, and which set a duration record for an aircraft powered by a scramjet, short for supersonic combustion ramjet engine. However, it was hoped that the X-51 would fly for as long as 300 seconds or 5 minutes and reach Mach 6. But during that flight, the Waverider suddenly lost acceleration, and the vehicle was terminated, destroyed, as planned by the Air Force said. Which, while moving at Mach 5, the loss of acceleration was attributed to a design flaw, which led to hot exhaust gas leaking from the engine into the electronics bays. Yes, cooking your electronics with the vented scramjet exhaust, not so good. The scramjet is an air-breathing engine, where intake air blows through the combustion chambers at supersonic speeds. This has been compared to lighting a match in a hurricane, and the concept has limited success. The engine has no moving parts, and the oxygen needed by the engine to combust is taken from the atmosphere passing through the vehicle, instead of from a tank on board, making the craft smaller, lighter, and faster. Designers say it could reach speeds of anywhere from Mach 12 to Mach 24. Mach 24 is more than 29,000 kilometers per hour. This could cut an 18-hour trip to Tokyo from New York City to less than 2 hours. That's pretty hot. That's some pretty hot and horny scramjet action right there. So, hey, very, very cool. Now, of course, robots. Something we always need to be aware of now that they're using robots along the border to hunt people. We've brought you that story. We know that now they've got the UAVs running along the border. The new UAVs can watch you breathing. I mean, just understand the robots are out there. They can see you. Okay, so just understand that, yeah, this is now, we used to have to be worried about dogs. Before then, you used to have to be worried about, you know, archers. And before that, you used to be worried about, you know, pirate bandit raiders. Now, you just have to be worried about flying robots that are, you know, preying on you. And iRobot has come out with yet another wonderful little toy for the military. It's introduced the 110 First Look, a very small and lightweight robot designed to be used for scouting and surveillance when you don't have access to its big brother, the Packbot. Now, you remember the Packbot. This was something you used to carry gear, that sort of thing. First Look is designed to be as rugged and reliable as iBot's other battlefield robots. It's throwable, can survive a 4.5-meter, 15-foot drop onto concrete, and complete submergence in water. Using a pair of rotating flippers, it can climb curbs and stairs, flip itself over if it ends up upside down. Top speed is 5.6 kilometers per hour, 3.5 miles per hour. First Look can scoot around for up to 6 hours on a charge, spend 10 hours broadcasting live video from a stationary position. If First Look robot looks somewhat familiar, it's because we saw a very similar robot as part of the iRobot's Ember Landroid prototype program, which was still active as of September 2010. That program intended to create a swarm of super cheap, less than $100 urban robots that can work together to form an adaptable, self-healing wireless network. Now, I'm not saying the First Look is related to Landroid, per se. It may just be iRobot has developed a simple, rugged, and reliable form factor that can be adapted for several different purposes. Interesting. However, First Look does have some very interesting Landroid capabilities. From iRobot's fact sheet, it says that the digital mesh networking allows multiple First Look robots to relay messages over greater distances, increasing line-of-sight and non-line-of-sight capabilities. The robot offers multiple public and military radio band configurations. So what we have here is small crawling mines. Really, they're like, you put an explosive charge on it, and you have these things work as a rebroadcaster. There's really no limit to how far they could go. So you just get these things, they rebroadcast out, and, you know, the minute you imagine having this on, say, like some wide open prairie space, and you have these things all along the side of the road. Have them solar powered, they're just sitting there in the sun, and you got cameras watching everything, and you can swarm them. I mean, you take each robot, put 6 shotgun shells in a revolver-style firing device on there, and every robot just, you know, takes off. They got 6 rounds. Bees only have 1 sting, and they can do a lot of damage. So try to imagine if you had, like, say, 200 or 300 of these robots, 6 shells apiece. You know, very interesting stuff. Plus, with the rebroadcasting ability, interesting. So, it's always good to know what's coming down the pipe. And, of course, with Japan and all the problems that are going on with toxins and dumping all this radioactive water into the ocean, which I'm sure is doing wonderful things for the ocean, but of course, all sewers lead to the ocean. Nobody gives a crap about the ocean at all. But, you know, we give a crap about ourselves, and we like to be survivors, and just in case you want to be more of a cyberchondriac, to help you with your cyberchondriacosis, you know, you should, because really you're just using technology to diagnose you. So if you're using, you know, a heart rate monitor or whatever, that might make you a cyberchondriac. And definitely if you take one of today's daily hacks and make a do-it-yourself Geiger counter, well, hey, just because the stupid Geiger counter says you're taking in radiation doesn't mean there's a problem. Like, I'm serious about going to the supermarket and just walking around with this thing, because you don't know. You really don't know. Any products coming out of Japan right now, or even from adjacent areas, you don't even know. Maybe, why not have a Geiger counter? Shouldn't go off, should it? Really? I mean, would you even know? What if you're walking around with this thing and you start finding a lot of rads? That's an interesting project. A do-it-yourself Geiger counter. Built in a fully functional Geiger counter capable of measuring the three primary forms of radiation, alpha, beta, and gamma radiation. The counter is sensitive enough to detect background radiation. In addition, you can enhance the basic Geiger counters by addition of a digital meter adapters, RS-232 with a free Windows radiation monitoring program and a random number generator. The Windows 90 XP radiation program is free and available for downloading. More on this later. The Geiger counter described here may be purchased as a kit or may be purchased as key components separately and built as the Geiger counter from scratch. The kit simplifies the construction. Images SI Inc. has many different Geiger counter kits available for purchase. The kit described here is the GK02 kit. The Geiger counter produces an audible click and blinks an LED each time it detects a radioactive particle. Now, if you were to build something like this, and say you built it into your wearable computer and had that LED on your goggles, which are GPS-enabled, I mean, there's a lot of different advantages for WOGs to be able to build their own Geiger counter, because, hey, sucks when you die. So, you know, might be a good idea to check that out. And keeping with this, in keeping with this particular piece of gear, Orfit sent in an interesting little thing on radiation detox, a very cool little story. Of course, this is all from the internet, so you know. Sad but true, there are thousands of scientific references and medical studies out there on the fact that radiation and radioactivity can harm you, yet despite millions of dollars spent by the government to study radiation, virtually nothing is available about detoxifying diet or nutritional supplements you might use to minimize the effect of radioactive contamination. Here's some of the information we do know from the only book in the world on the topic. Keep this information in the back of your mind, as one day it may help someone you know. And of course, links there, plus links to the book. And a lot of the research was taken and was written down from a guy who got nuked in Hiroshima. So, interesting stuff there. Something you would definitely want to check out. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry. I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the WOGs Who Care. If you can't donate to this program, please distribute. Get the show to people who you think might enjoy it. But if you can donate, please do so by swinging by Rant Media, pick up some of our swag, or you can actually just make a donation, which is also allowed. You can send an envelope, if you like, to Rant Media Studios, Box 95089, 370 East Broadway, Vancouver, BC, Canada, Victor 5 Tango 1 Whiskey 0. And of course, a big thanks out to all the WOGs out there and the Army of the Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you would like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at randradio.com. Be sure to sign up for the Rand newsletter by sending an email to info@randradio.com. And if you like the music in the background, you should seriously check out some Psytrance, Infected Mushroom, 10,000 mics? No, 12,000 mics. Well, I can't remember the name of that band. But there's a lot of good Psytrance out there. Check it out. It's good stuff. Going to fade out now with a track which Cyzeris actually posted just before the show. It's Metallica, Enter the Sandman, done in smooth jazz. Very, very cool. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.